from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. When Liesl Schillinger, then 48, struck up a conversation with 22-year-old Nadia Lenhardt-Hooper, she had no idea that the two would become fast friends. But they have, and their 26-year age gap friendship has grown and influenced both women in ways neither quite saw coming. It's a story about the strength and impact of surprising relationships across age boundaries. This hour On Point, female friendship across generations, and what women are thinking of our national moment right now. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Have you reached outside your age circle for a friend? Was there a special value in that friendship? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Later in the hour, we'll look at the life and legacy of veteran journalist Gwen Ifill, the 61-year-old PBS NewsHour co-anchor and moderator of Washington Week with Gwen Ifill, died yesterday after a battle with cancer. But first, a surprising friendship. Joining us now from New York is Liesl Schillinger, freelance journalist, critic, and translator. Her essay in the November edition of Vogue magazine is headlined, My Millennial Friend. You can link to it at our website, onpointradio.org. Liesl, welcome back to On Point.
Hello, Tom. It's nice to be here.
Julie, nice to have you back. And with us from New York is that friend, Nadia Lenhardt-Hooper, an actor, writer, director, recent graduate of Vassar College. Nadia, welcome to On Point.
Thanks for having me.
Liesl, we've talked about books and lots of things over time, and this essay just caught one of my young producer's eye and said, all right, why not? And particularly right now where in the home stretch of the presidential campaign, women and their outlook on politics and the world were so much in the news, both as a way to step back and maybe then to dive in at the same time. We were struck by this and how this friendship came into your life kind of out of the blue and brought a new angle on life to you, a new sense of it. And it started, you write, Liesl, in a laundromat.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was not expecting this. I was just, you know, doing my laundry, and I've lived in the same neighborhood in New York for 25 years and in the same apartment, in fact. And so there was just a tall, lively woman who looked very friendly, unscary, who was taking her clothes out of the dryer, and I praised her on her skirt. And the next thing I knew, she was saying, oh, I know, I got it at H&M, and this 86-year-old man on the street outside was just hitting on me. And I was like, wait, okay. And so I just sort of matched her energy, and we started talking, and it turned out we were both from Midwestern college towns, both, you know, we both were German-American, and I had this eerie sense that I was talking with my best friend in high school back, you know, in the 1980s, who was also a professor's kid in the Midwest with a German-American background. Mm. So I still have that feeling. When I look at Nadia right now, I just literally think I'm 17 again. And that energy rebooted my life.
Well, talk about the energy. Was this beyond the sort of sentimental journey of feeling like you were 17 and striking up a friendship again? What was the impact of that energy, that reboot?
Well, the thing about the thing that is most important to me as a person on the planet is to be creatively productive. And, you know, I've been a journalist for 30 years, but my first 20 years was working as a kind of editor at a magazine, but I've only been writing for only 10 years. Mm-hmm. And this girl, you know, didn't have the security of a day job. She wanted only to create, you know, from the get-go. You know, she was hitting the ground of New York, running, doing nothing but expressive creation. And I just thought that was exciting. But also, she was such a workaholic in a good-natured, fun way. But no, I mean, she was seemed to be just completely uncomplicatedly joyful about the idea that she was working three jobs simultaneously, unpaid for different theater companies, and working on her own play as well. I just seeing, oh yeah, I used to think that I was going to produce that much, but then I got a day job and was afraid to be as daring. You know, this girl was doing it, and it reminded me of what I'd meant to do in the first place.
Nadia, you were 22. Liesl was 48. Was that a big deal to you as you treaded in the laundromat? Did you think this might become a real significant friendship in my life, or did it seem, well, you know, nice conversation, but she's just not my crew?
No, I certainly hoped it would become a real friendship. Both of my parents are older, an older generation, so I've actually always had a really hard time judging age. Like, when I meet someone, I cannot guess how old they are. So when I met Liesl, I mean, it sounds stupid to say, like, I don't see age, but I have a really hard time gauging it. And it doesn't really, I think, make that much of a difference to me as it is. And it's funny because everything that Liesl says about me, that I'm, you know, a workaholic or that I'm fiery or that I'm constantly creating, was what I was immediately taken with Liesl about. Aww. You know, I mean, she says this kind of stuff, but she's the exact same way. I mean, she's, you know, churning out multiple pieces a week and constantly doing multiple things, you know, at all times, really. I mean, the first time we met in a laundromat and then we had coffee later that week.
You emailed me.
Right.
I just thought it was so funny. I know, she's like, this 22-year-old girl has emailed me.
It's such a bummer. Like, okay. I feel like millennials have this.
Is that transgressive for a 22-year-old to email a 48-year-old and say, let's have coffee?
Or is
that just.
I don't know.
But yeah, well,
I mean,
not
maybe
transgressive,
it is.
But like, I was like, aren't I so old that I'm just like one of the wah, wah voices from Peanuts for her? Like, does she think
I can't
I'm a
hear
person?
You.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe I don't think my friends feel that. And I mean, also, so many of my friends in the last year have met Liesl and all adore Liesl and think she's totally out of her mind and wonderful and really
smart.
I am
not out of my mind.
Well,
you
I
guys
mean,
think I'm eccentric.
You are eccentric. Nuh-uh. But I don't think I really want to hang out with people who aren't eccentric. You know?
Another funny thing is Nadia's half a foot taller than me, and I've always thought that people taller
That's
than
true.
Me are older than me because my mother's also half a foot taller than me. And so, despite her youth,
Liesl
I'm somewhat
that I am her mother. That's the real takeaway.
Well, one thing that struck me as you wrote about it, Liesl, for Vogue was the way you talk about how over time, decades, people, yourself, become sort of encrusted here. You pick up baggage. I mean, you're not ageist when it comes to friendship, obviously, here. But you look around, you see, you know, time encrusts our original personalities with habits, histories, complications. The selves we first brought to our friendships have been filigreed with marriages and children, divorces and breakups, career changes, death and illness, just as deforming triumphs and successes. And you say, each time I meet with one of my close old friends, each of us chooses a different time-scuffed self to bring to the fore. The bitter, ironic, or plucky self greets the single or divorced friend. The somber workaholic self shares grievances with the friend who's a slave to her desk. The consoling self soothes the friend whose marriage is in trouble. The resourceful self bucks up the friend who's afraid of a new career move. The humble self praises the lucky friend. This was just simpler, fresher?
It's not that it's simpler and fresher. It's that we have forgotten that every encounter with any friend, however long held, however old, is a new encounter, and we can bring newness to it. We get, I think that we bring baggage that doesn't need to be there into our interactions, even with our, you know, even with our firm old friends. We forget to be as original or as hopeful as we really are. We just fall into a habit of behavior that keeps us, I think, from, I don't know, from sensing the possibility in every encounter with every friend. And with Nadia, that was just the possibility is just always to the fore because she doesn't have that package yet.
Did you feel either of you any social taboo about a friendship across ages?
Well, not a taboo exactly, but as I write in the piece, I really did not invite her for almost a year to any of my friend parties, you know, the parties with the people my age. I just didn't think about it. And I really only have seen her friends and her age group, not counting her boyfriend, whom he came to my summer share in Fire Island with her this summer. But, you know, as far as her giant, you know, rat pack of jolly thespian friends from Vassar, I've seen them when they're rehearsing in my house or I've seen them at their plays. But, you know, I haven't really gone out drinking on a Friday with them and she hasn't come out with to my friends, you know, gatherings. So I have, in a funny way, kept it sort of separate. But, you know, Nadia lives around the corner. This is literally like being in high school again. We can just ring on each other's bells and, like, have scrambled eggs and sit and talk about what's going on.
When you first met, Nadia was in the middle of a project she was calling something like 50 internet dates in 50 days. It kind of blew my mind in itself. But,
oh,
but that, we'll get back to that. But that wasn't as weird to you, Liesl, as it might. I mean, It's a realm that you share. You were out there as well, sort of. You're single, I guess, or were. And
I'm completely single, you know, and I'm kind of unrepentant about it, you know.
It wasn't like that with 50 internet dates in 50 days, as extreme sport as that may sound. It was familiar to you in a way.
Liesl's actually done something like that, but pre-internet, right, Liesl?
Wait, what?
The Card Project?
Oh, yeah. No, I actually wrote an unpublished novel about a dating system I was trying to devise, like a taxonomy of the men I was dating, trying to figure out which was the keeper. And it was pretty funny. Yeah, the internet just sped things up for the millennials, I guess.
Right.
And for my Generation X, dragging on. And I even know people in what's the name of the greatest generation? The boomers, who are on, you know, Tinder or OkCupid. It's a good way for people to meet people. I just have had absolutely no luck with it.
But it gave you a kind of common vocabulary, at least, of how you all went fishing, if that's what it was.
Yeah, I guess so.
Well, but after meeting Nadia, though, I revised my age barriers, but I revised them upward, which may not make sense to you, but I'd been wary of dating older men. After meeting Nadia and realizing she didn't think I was like a decayed fossil, maybe I was ruling out men who were older than me who might actually have a lot to contribute and I might actually feel vibrant around them. So she's actually allowed me to grow up a little.
Yes, I've helped Liesl be less ageist against older people in a strange turn of events.
Are you guys outliers, or do you sense that there's a new freedom across age boundaries?
Well, I don't know. I mean, we're the only friendship like this that I know about.
On the other hand, you know, thinking back, when I arrived at The New Yorker when I was 21, there's a colleague of mine who was like 35 years older than me, and she didn't have the thing that Nadia and I do, but we became really important friends.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about female friendship across generations. What happens when women cross the age barrier? We'll talk a little about women in the Trump presidency, I guess, before we're finished here. And we will look at the death of 61-year-old veteran journalist Gwen Ifill yesterday. Sad news right there. Joyful news in a friendship between Liesl Schillinger, freelance journalist, critic, and translator, has often been on this show talking about books and literature and more, and Nadia Leonhard Hooper, actor, writer, director. 22 when they met. Liesl was 48, and a fast friendship was formed. You can join us this hour. What do you hear in the story of Liesl and Nadia? What's learned, what's gained when age is not a cage? And when we shake up our friend circle, can we shake up our lives, make them better? If you looked outside your immediate circle and found new life, new perspectives, new energy, new friends. Liesl and Nadia, people responding online. Danielle says, I'm 44 and enjoy adventures and girl talk with my 70-year-old friend. Folk festivals, road trips, brunches for the past 15 years. Hope says, I find it super easy to be friends with boomers, the greatest generation, even silent generation members, but more difficult to be friends with Gen X. I guess that's her own age. Very strange. Everybody's got their way. And people calling in for the two of you. New York, Johnson City, New York. Anna, thank you for calling. You're on the air with Nadia and Liesl.
Hello. Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
I just wanted to comment on intergenerational friendships. I do theater, and in my community, there's this...
Anna.
And I have the honor of performing with women of all ages. I met some Gen Xers in my last show. I'm a millennial, and baby boomers, as you just said, I have these wonderful, deep friendships with women who are so much older than me, and it just means so much to be working on a common goal with people of such different ages, and they don't look at me and say, she's a millennial, you know.
What do you get from it, Anna? What do you get from it that might be different? I don't know.
I get new perspective. I get their knowledge. I get the satisfaction of knowing that I'm not limited to just meeting people from my own age. It's best to have a diverse range of things you talk about and people you know, and and to know these women who are so much older than me, but we're sitting there and talking about the same thing and working towards the same thing and performing, especially that medium, just putting forth the same level of passion. It just shows that, you know, age doesn't mean anything when it comes to passion and friendship.
Anna, I really appreciate your call very much. Nadia, I mean, Liesl says, you know, she found in you this kind of energy and inspiration in your youthful, undimmed ambition and the rest. What about you? When you were hanging with Liesl, all right, she's a different age, a different number than you. Was there something that came from this relationship that was different in texture or that inspired something different in you from your own age cohort?
Yeah, of course. I mean, I think something I really took from Liesl is she really said to me within the first few weeks of us becoming friends, she said, you must be ambitious. Like you are young, you are talented, you just have to go for it.
Step it up.
Yeah, basically. She, you know, she's told me lots of stories about, you know, her making her way as a writer in New York and, you know, facing difficulties and just saying, I'm going to do it. I'm just going to do all of it, you know? And I think there's something really valuable, especially I think for young people who are right out of college, of having friends who aren't in their generation, because I went to Vassar. I loved going to Vassar. But I think it's true for a lot of small, you know, liberal arts colleges, you're putting a group of very bright, very driven, and often very neurotic young people together basically in a tiny village in the woods alone. And then you're surprised when they all come out with the same worries. You know what I mean? It's everyone my age is thinking, how can I, you know, make money? How can I make the world a better place? How can I live ethically in an unethical world? How can I make art? It's all of the same worries that I think are very natural for people coming right out of college. And, you know, my year out of college was so profoundly shaped by being friends with Liesl and by being friends with the 7-year-old who I babysit, whose name is Leela, you know. So my two best friends are in their late 40s and 7. And and it's hugely helpful. And it's interesting, actually, how similar they are in many ways, you know?
Come on.
No, I mean, in a great way. And this boundless energy and this sort of hunger for life is, it's amazing to see, you know?
Liesl, did it perk you up? I mean, you write that hanging out with Nadia was like continually being confronted with an image of my younger, surer, more idealistic self. A prompt to, keep it vibrant.
One thing that I put in the story is, like, she was working around the clock writing a play, which was, in fact, inspired to some degree by stories I had told her. I was writing about a collection of Russian folktales and was talking about how hilarious they are because they're really pessimistic and there's, like, no happy moral.
There's no moral.
Like, the lazy are rewarded, the wicked win. You know, you're like, what? You know, the evil witch who eats people helps young lovers find them. I mean, it just, nothing makes sense.
It's awesome.
So she whipped that into a play in, like, over a month. And that play has been playing in Brooklyn this week. And it was thrilling for me to go there with my 6-year-old goddaughter and a friend of mine and her 7-year-old daughter. And Leela was there. I met the girl that Nadia babysits, Leela, because they did a matinee children's performance. And do you know how good it felt in this bleak week to have three little girls glowing with excitement to see a woman-led theater troupe creating this whimsy of the absurdity of life, you know, in which every woman in it got what she wanted? I mean, it was just – I just felt like Nadia's troupe was – showing the way to the next generation of girls. And, you know, and I was, because of Nadia having created that play, I was able to feel I'd had a hand in it too. I just love the sense of multi-generational solidarity.
Cross-generational girl, many R's power there. Emily in Omaha, Nebraska. Emily, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Hi.
I'm so excited to comment about intergenerational female friendships because I am very lucky to have a dear friend, one of my best, who is probably twice my age. She would kill me for saying that. but she is just, you know, I found a friend in her when I needed friends in college, and she helped me. She was part of the community I'm in, which I'm an avid equestrian. I ride, I train my horse, and I needed help. And so I reached out to someone who I saw was successful. Not only did I get a lot of success in training my horse, but I gained this amazing friend. So what I have kind of learned through her friendship is that reaching out within your own community. Now, the previous caller spoke about being part of a, you know, a theater group, and that's what gained her friendships, and my friendship came from my horse community here in Nebraska. But I just think it's such an invaluable resource to have, not only a friend, but someone who I can seek for advice and who I can get help with my horse and get help as a teacher. You know, she's a social worker, I'm a teacher, and so...
Is it a two-way street, Emily? Are you looking for advice from an older friend? Is it, what does she gain from her time or conversation with you?
Well, I think I'm pretty funny, so I think I entertain her with my humor. So I'm certain she would say that I'm funny as well. So we seek each other for advice, and we seek each other just for companionship and someone to talk to, because there's a lot going on in the world, and especially with everything that happened in the past week, you know, it's nice to have someone who has been through more upsets politically than I have, and so it's good to have someone to say, oh my gosh, the world's not going to end, it's going to be okay, kind of stuff.
Emily, I appreciate your call. Liesl Nagy, can we talk about the last week? And maybe, is this a moment when, Liesl, are you handing down wisdom now, sage wisdom on how to, you know, look across the crashing waves of life and see the steady constant on the horizon? I don't know what. Are you the wise counselor?
I don't know who can really offer sure advice at a time like this. Mm-hmm. At a time like this, though, is when we need to see the determination and energy and progressive values of the younger generation. Nadia pointed out this morning, we were talking about if the millennials alone, if only their vote had counted, Hillary Clinton would have won. And so the future is hopeful. But the present, I don't really know how to decode.
Yeah.
Do you look for wisdom from Liesl because she's twice your age, more than Nadia, or something else?
I think, I mean, sort of what I've always looked for in Liesl is just a friend like any other friend. Like, we debate, you know, we discuss, we disagree. I think more than often we agree. But I don't know. I don't think I put Liesl on this sort of wise old woman pedestal because I don't think of her as an old woman. I don't think of her as like my old friend. You know, I just think of her as my friend who is smart and well-read and has definitely, you know, read more than I have and experienced more than I have, but that we both have perspectives that, you know, I don't know. I just don't see it that way.
One thing I think is worth pointing out is I also have zillions of friends who are my generation. My book club met last night. We met for solidarity, really, because we met a little early. We needed to see each other's faces after the election. And I depend, you know, there are about 24 women in the book club. Mm-hmm. Usually 12
Big.
Of us show up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I've known them for ages, and our friendship really matters. I will say that in front of Nadia, because of the age difference, I feel a little more, I think I show a bit more vulnerability. And at the same time, you know, I'm not, I guess maybe I let my guard down a bit more with Nadia because she's younger. But in the same token, I mentioned earlier in the hour that when I got to New York, I had an older friend who I still have, who's 35 years older than me. Mm-hmm. She's 85. We go to an amazing gourmet dinner and every 2 months at Macy's where a chef creates something. And she has always been for me an example that a woman in New York living on her own can continue to live the life she chooses, enjoys, and wants. I don't have to get married again. It can work. It can be a success story. Mm-hmm. I mean, this woman has always existed to me in New York as a wonderful proof that an independent woman can exist and can be happy.
Did you say you show more vulnerability to what maybe your youngest friend, Nadia, than you would to your peers? And why, Liesl?
Well, this may sound – I hope I'm not giving away too much here, but I think on some level – there is a kind of competition that operates among people of the same age.
Mm.
And I just that whole edge to a relationship is gone when there's as big an age difference as there is between me and my older friend, Dusty, and me and Nadia, who's younger. This competition just vanishes when you get more than a decade apart, for me at least.
Yeah, I think that's totally true.
Did you find some comfort in the number of election seasons that Liesl has seen compared to yourself, Nadia? Or is it just, as you say, just feel like two women looking out on the world?
I think it's that. I mean, yeah, I think it's that. I don't think the number of election seasons is really all that comforting in this moment. I mean, This is obviously in some ways a drastic change, and it's shocking, but it's also very much in line with a history of the right wing in America, you know, and it's rearing its ugliest Trumpian head right now, you know.
This is really, though, an anomalous election. I mean, this is I have no context. The past elections I've seen, you know, I gave my Tooth Fairy money to George McGovern's campaign. That didn't go so well. My parents went to the Chicago riots. I come from a progressive liberal family. So, you know, this is shocking. During the night of the election, Nadia and I were texting each other in mounting despair, you know. And then I think you came over for dinner the next day briefly before you're going someplace else.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was nothing to say other than, you know, we must not be complacent.
There are yes.
I think it's also a really important time for white women to talk to each other and figure out why 53% of us voted for Trump. You know, like that's
you
that
said,
is
did you say white women?
Yes,
white women.
Yeah,
it's
white
unconscionable
women.
That 50. What's the matter with white women? In other words, is
well,
the question.
Right. But what I mean, that is a lot of women who politically would not agree with you. I mean, you happen to be of the same kind of political leanings, but that's a lot of women who made that decision voluntarily. Don't
right.
do you
That's
respect?
True. We need to
do you not respect their agency in making
no,
that decision?
No, I don't think it's a matter of not respecting their agency. I think it's a matter of sort of looking into in a cooperative in a coalition building way why women are voting, in my opinion, against their interests.
I would say exactly
like,
the same
and why women are voting against the interests of, you know, of minorities and of immigrants who really all of these struggles are tied together. I mean, it seems like in the aftermath of the election, there is such a lack of intersectional thinking. You know, it's like I don't really – I mean, I don't fully understand it. I think women – you know, women who call themselves feminists really need to begin thinking more intersectionally.
I mean,
and talking –
Mm. Exactly.
Go ahead.
Well, you've heard the newly named chief strategist in the White House, Steve Bannon.
Yeah.
You went to Vassar. He's talked about – it's one of the seven sister schools. And he's talked about – he said that, you know, conservative women pose a threat to women perhaps like you and Liesl. He was pretty crude about it. This is something he said on a while back. He said because they're a bunch of dykes that come from the seven sister schools.
Yeah.
I mean –
He loves that word.
I guess. But he's championing – and certainly they stood up and voted a different political stripe of American woman.
Well, you know, I was just working on an op-ed about this morning, and I just think that there is an unexamined, deep misogyny that lurks in women, even women who are progressive or sometimes who don't like a woman who doesn't mirror exactly how they would act or what they would think. I think any time I think there's a tendency to demonize a woman who shows naked ambition. I think it doesn't sit well with lots of women. Now, I don't know what it is that the conservative women, you know, the Laura Ingraham contingent, I mean, I don't know what all of their gripes are with Hillary Clinton, why they would prefer Trump. I'd like to hear about it. I mean, Steve Bannon, it's just an atrocity to think that he is going to be having anything to do with what comes from the White House in the next 4 years. I mean, the overt prejudice and the vile language he's used to demean minorities and women is unthinkable.
Nadia, you were 22 when you met Liesl. Do you have optimism as a progressive in spite of the moment we're in, or are you thinking?
Yeah, I do. I mean, the first day after the election, I definitely did not. But I've been, you know, reading and listening to a lot of people who are doing more work on this than I am. As someone who is putting on a cat circus right now, I would not claim to be, you know, a political expert at this moment. But, I mean, it's not hopeless. It's never hopeless, you know. And my hope from this election, I mean, if Hillary Clinton had won, I think things much more would have returned to business as usual. And I think we would not have had to deal with the fact that an electoral majority elected someone, you know, like
felt
Trump.
That need of change.
Yeah, or no, I mean, who bought into a racist and xenophobic and misogynistic leader who promised them economic change that he cannot deliver, frankly, you know, that they were essentially duped or they chose to go for change over really the lives and safety of women and minorities and immigrants.
Support for On Point and the following message comes from Blue Apron, providing pre-portioned fresh ingredients with easy recipes delivered to your door. Check out this week's menu and get three meals free with free shipping at blueapron.com/onpoint. Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about female friendship across generations, what happens when women cross the age barrier, with Liesl Schillinger, freelance journalist, critic, translator, author of Word Birds, and an essay in Vogue called My Millennial Friend. That would be Nadia Leonhardt Hooper, also with us today from New York. They met in a laundromat around the block, became fast friends, and now Liesl's written about it. They're joining us to think about cross-generational friendship like theirs. You can join us this hour if you looked outside your immediate circle and found new life, new perspectives, new friends. And while we're at it, women, what are you thinking about in the new age of Trump? Are you leaning on your friends, talking with your friends about what comes next? In a few minutes, Shamish Alcindor joins us to remember Gwen Ifill, the PBS news anchor. Kristen in Nashville, Tennessee is calling. Kristen, you're on the air with Nadia and Liesl. Thank you very much for calling.
Hi, Tom. I only have a moment. I'm getting ready to walk into a meeting, but I heard your discussion, and rather than turn to politics, I just wanted to say that I'm in my mid-40s, and one of my best friends is actually in her mid-60s. We met at a party, and although I was there to see her daughter, it was she and I that actually ended up connecting, and through the years, I guess it's been about 15 years now, she has just been such a safe place for me. She's older. She's wiser. I find that I can completely open up with her about what's going on in my life without fear of being judged or maybe competing or comparing. And she's just wonderful. So I would definitely say there's a lot of merit in looking outside of our age group for alliances with other females. Kristen. And that's all. I have to hang up now, but I'll continue to listen.
Thank you, Kristen. I love it. I mean, nothing wrong with friends. Any kind of friend is a great thing. In our own age group, great as well. But looking more widely there and feeling the freedom, Nadia, Kristen's saying from Nashville, the freedom to be more open with someone who's coming out of a different cohort. Did you feel that?
I did in some ways. Well, I don't know. Again, I really didn't think of Liesl as my older friend.
Yeah,
I didn't.
Yeah, yeah.
It's hard. People often ask me, is Liesl like a mother figure to you? Is Liesl, is it an aunt thing? Are you dating? What is going on here? And I kind of don't know what to tell. I'm like, Liesl is my friend the way that you are my friend, you know? I mean, I definitely go to Liesl. I think especially for things relating to my career, I often go to Liesl for advice and my relationships as well, you know? And I think
you also helped me find cat sitters.
Right,
that's
exactly.
Another advantage of being friends.
I am Liesl's number one cat sitter. No one will ever replace me.
Right. And not dating. Very hetero-oriented from what I can see in your online lives that you write about here, Liesl. You say, being straight, I'm not in the habit of picking up women. But friends, that's a different thing. What about you, Liesl? Do you feel the freedom to be more open because of the age difference? Or is it not
matter
there?
But one other thing is, I mean, this, I don't know what this has to do with anything, but I think that I have a level of energy that can kind of disconcert people
it's
of my own age group.
It's extremely disconcerting.
I mean, it's kind of like, I'm kind of like a border collie puppy in a way, and I don't have to calm that down when I'm talking to Nadia. Maybe she thinks I'm crazy, but she doesn't mind. So I'm
Some of my friends have met Liesl and immediately asked me if she uses performance-enhancing drugs.
That was your mom.
That was my mom. Hi, Mom. But I mean, the first day that I met Liesl, the first day that we had coffee, I walked into her apartment and she was like, I'm so glad you came. I'm making coffee. I've just dropped my phone in the tub. It's in a bag of rice on the sink drying it out. I'm working on three pieces. I want to tell you about all of them. Do you want sugar in your coffee? Let's go and sit out in the backyard and talk about this. And it was like a whirl. It was a really fun whirlwind that I found myself in the middle of, you know.
When she talks in my voice, I totally freak out. I realize that she thinks like I'm a complete, like I'm Maude and she's Harold or something. I'm like, I'm not that eccentric.
We'll accept that. We'll accept that for the moment. Jim in Suffolk, Virginia. You're on with Liesl and Nadia. Hi, Jim.
Thank you very much for taking the call. I'm the only man I've heard. I wanted to comment that I'm very proud to listen to these women that are the younger women that are seeking out, and the word knowledge has come into play a couple of times.
Mm-hmm.
I find that as an older person myself in my 70s, I can't communicate with the young people, men, boys, that are so tied into the technological age that mm-hmm. they go seeking information in places like the computer, and they have no knowledge or experience to use that information properly, and that the women are way outstripping the men on their ability to connect over generations. And it's a sad experience. There's no civic duty or humanity focus in the younger men that I hear talking, trying to talk to at times. And I just think that's a sad commentary. Every nation has its revering of the older people and seeking knowledge from the older people. And we have not taken that path, and especially among the men.
Jim, I appreciate your call. Our time is short, but do you feel a special freedom, Liesl or Nadia, as women to do that?
Well, it's really interesting because I think, I mean, I laughed. I love the Vogue piece, but I laughed when I heard that it was happening because it was like, headline, women have become friends. Yeah. World is
imagine,
shocked.
Imagine.
Like, exactly. It's right. Like, and I think women are taught to compete with one another. Women are taught to compete with one another for male attention, for career advancements, because there are supposedly fewer slots for us, you know. But I think in some ways it is also much easier for women to have really, really intimate friendships and to share deeply and to, you know, reveal vulnerabilities. And I think I'm really hopeful for the younger generation of men because a lot of the men that I see around me are working really hard to sort of get out of this multi-generational basically trauma of being told, don't cry, don't show your emotions, don't empathize with other people, basically. You know, I think that's a really, really traumatic way that men are being taught to be men. And I hope that the younger generation is beginning to break out of that.
Well, I would also say that As you'll see in the piece, I do tend to date younger men, whereas Nadia tends to date older men. And I see in the younger men actually more human interactivity, more emotional breadth. And Jim, who called from, was it Virginia?
Yes.
I mean, my family lives in Virginia, so I know that rural men are different than city men, and things are different across the country. But I do feel hope for the millennial generation of men as well. I see them expressing themselves, you know, in more creative ways, expressing more emotion. But then there is also simultaneously the shut-in tech trend, which is too bad. And, you know, related to that, the thing that I think that most drew me to Nadia is that I think she thinks that the most enjoyable thing for a source of enjoyment in the world comes from other people, interacting with them, listening with them, acting with them, talking with them. And we're getting to be real humans on our block at the laundromat or, you know, over the kitchen table. And it's wonderful to have a kind of pre-tech human friendship.
Liesl writes in her essay, people say that having a child is like having your heart walking around outside your body. For me, being friends with Nadia is like seeing my hopes walking around outside of my body, visible, palpable. It makes me want, she writes, to defend them, to nurture them, to honor them. Her vitality, her futurity have filled me with new optimism for myself, for her, for everyone, old and young alike. I'll take that this week. I'll take just a double helping of that. That's pretty wonderful. And we're glad that you found it, and we appreciate your sharing it with us. Nadia Leonard-Hooper in New York, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you, Tom.
Liesl Schillinger, it's always great to have you here. Your essay is up at our website, onpointradio.org. My millennial friend, thank you, Liesl. Come again soon.
Great talking to you.
Wonderful to have
Bye.
You. In a moment, we'll hear about the life and legacy of Gwen Ifill. This is On Point. Gwen Ifill, one of the country's most prominent political journalists, died yesterday at 61 after a private battle with cancer. As PBS NewsHour co-anchor and managing editor and moderator of Washington Week with Gwen Ifill, She left an indelible mark on the news industry, a mark which neither the fans who watched her nor the friends she made will soon forget. Joining me now is Yamiche Alcindor. She's a reporter and videographer covering national politics for the New York Times. Gwen Ifill was a longtime mentor to her. Yamiche, welcome back to On Point. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I'm well and sorry and sad, like so many others, about the passing of Gwen Ifill. I was not wholly plugged into her struggle with cancer. You knew her well. How private was she about it, Yamiche?
I mean, she was pretty private about it, mainly because she had, was really working through, and by working, I mean actually appearing on air and covering the election season throughout her sickness. So she was really battling this disease, but really was doing it with a grace and really a tenacity that was showing me and so many others that you kind of push through. So she was pushing through a lot, but she was pretty private about it.
We've been talking in this era about cross-generational friendships. I guess that would characterize yours with Gwen. How did you meet and where and at what ages, sort of?
So I was about 19, so about 10 years ago, and I met her and her one of her other really good friends, Adelia Knight, who is a former reporter at the Washington Post. I met both of them because we had the same hairdresser in Washington, D.C. I was a college student at Georgetown at the time and kept basically telling my hairdresser how much I wanted to be a reporter. And she said, you know, you should really meet these two women that I know. And when I realized who they were, I was like, wait, what?
just two women.
So these two really iconic women. So I met Gwen under a hairdryer one day, and she started reading my stories and saying, hey, you know, you're doing a good job. And her and her friend, they really helped me picking out internships, deciding where to go. When I got my current job at the New York Times, I spent a lot of time talking to her about her time at the Times and kind of what she had gone up against and what it was like to work here as an African-American woman and cover politics. And she was someone who really, as busy as she was, as much as she had all this other stuff going on and running her show, she would watch my Meet the Press interviews and say, hey, you know, this is what you did well, and this is, you know, make sure that you know about this and make sure you're reading before you go on. And she really taught me a lot about really how to prepare myself and how to translate the skills of writing to being able to speak both in radio and on TV.
You were 19 then. She died at 61, sadly. She would have been, you know, around 50 then. Sounds like she really reached out and became a mentor to you. Was that because she saw your talent? Was that because you were a young woman? Because you shared African-American roots? What do you think was really motivating her? Just a good person?
I think she was really a good person, and the fact that I couldn't stop talking to my hairdresser when I met her and Adelia, I like endeared myself to them. I was like, you should clearly adopt me. I clearly need your help. So a lot of it, I think, was one, her really feeling like she wanted to be a good person and react to this young woman who really wanted to follow in her footsteps. And two, I think that once I was getting higher and higher in my career, she realized that as an African-American woman, I was starting to get into these spaces that were not occupied by very many African-American women. So even working at the New York Times and being on TV and being a political reporter, not too many African-American women do that job. So I think that she also understood that I needed support and that when she was my age and when she was in these newsrooms that she would have wanted support. So I think a lot of it was also her seeing in me, not just, yes, I'm a talented journalist, but really that to survive these places, you need someone to really watch you and talk to you. And I think that there was that. And I mean, just thinking about our time together, one of the first times I talked to her, I met her, I introduced myself and said, hey, I'm Yamiche, but you can call me Mish if you want to. And she said, well, do you like having a nickname? And I actually don't. I like my full name. I like being called Yamiche.
Yes.
But sometimes it's hard for people to say my full name. And she said, well, if that's what your name is, then you should get people to say your full name. Like, don't give people the option.
Right.
And I thought to that, she was telling me not just, you know, about your name, but about who you are. Like, be exactly who you want to be. If you want to wear your hair in an afro, but you're really smart and you really want to cover politics, then go after it and be yourself. And that was something that I think I really cherish now as I get older and as I move into other spaces. I know a little bit more about myself and I'm a more stable in who I am.
Yamiche,
because of her.
Let's hear a little bit of Gwen's voice as we remember her right here, kind of along these lines. This is 2015. She was interviewed by her close friend and fellow journalist Michelle Norris for an episode of PBS series The History Makers. Here's Ifill telling something of her story.
When I was a little girl, there was a woman named Melba Tolliver who was on the news, and she had a big afro. And I just was transfixed by this idea. It didn't make me want to be in television as much as it made me want to tell the story. And every now and then, I am not particularly interested in, you know, I just get caught up in whatever the day's work is, and invariably somebody will come up to me and tell me the story of their little girl. And it always stops me in my tracks. Because as long as I remember that there's someone on the other side of the piece of equipment, the camera, who's watching me with expectation, and it can shape what they do next, I have to take what I do seriously every single day.
Gwen Ifill there in 2015, remembering as she did her television work, someone watching, maybe a young woman, maybe a girl on the other side of that equipment, the camera. That's a powerful thing for someone who's broadcasting to have in mind. It keeps it intimate, keeps it real, Yamiche.
It does keep it real. And when she talks about, you know, those little girls on the other side, that was me and my friends. I have a friend who's an anchor in North Carolina, and we in some ways grew up watching Gwen Ifill and grew up just looking at her and wanting to be just like her. And now our friendship that we have, we talk to each other and we support each other. And we do that because we see in this woman someone who was being a role model. And we realize now in our own veins that we're not Gwen Ifills yet, but we're people that people look at and say, hey, like, this girl's on MSNBC or talking to NPR, and she has an afro, and her name is Yamiche Alcindor, and that doesn't sound like, you know, that doesn't sound like someone who could just be, you know, the average, quote-unquote, version of an American. I think that there are so many different cultures, and this idea that my friend is now sitting at an anchor desk in North Carolina, and there are girls looking at her saying, you know, I could be that woman, I could be that black woman behind an anchor desk, it does really resonate with you. And I should say, Gwen Ifill spoke at my graduation. I was graduating from Georgetown in 2009, so I got to not only be mentored by her, but my entire class listened to her tell her story, and that to me also just made her resonate so much more deeply with me and some of my friends who went into journalism.
Yamiche Alcindor, we really appreciate your spending a few minutes with us today to remember Gwen Ifill. Just terrific to have you and to think about how these relationships play out across time. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks so much.
Yamiche Alcindor, reporter, videographer for the New York Times, Gwen Ifill, a longtime mentor to her. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.